Bush and Richie here with your Daily Takeaway podcast. In this show, you're about to hear me bang on, probably a little bit too much actually, about the fact that I'd just been for lunch in the daytime with legendary board game designer Mark Herman.
You will hear them. You will hear chat about that. You were very excited. I don't want to say too much more now because they'll hear it in the episode, but your excitement was palpable.
Very excited. And we had a dessert after lunch. We went for an Italian meal and we had dessert. And is it interesting what people choose as their go-to dessert? Do you have like a go-to dessert when you go out for dinner or lunch?
If I see lemon meringue pie, I find it very difficult to look past.
You very rarely see lemon meringue pie, though, these days.
Sadly, and I speak to you, UK restaurant business, I feel like lemon meringue pie just doesn't seem to be done these days.
Needs a bit of a comeback.
Yes, fantastic.
I'm always a little bit disappointed with, right, A, people who get ice cream, because I think ice cream's for children.
Yeah.
You can't have an ice cream as your dessert. Secondly, and this is where my other half, Katie, does this. I don't know if anyone else's other halves do it. She does that all the time. What is that? It's not even a dessert, is it?
So, a couple of things. First of all, ice cream is only acceptable as part of another,
bigger picture.
If you've got like a heated up brownie or a sticky toffee pudding or something like that, unless you're a child, as you said.
100%.
The plate of chocolates, that's for after a coffee. You don't get those if you've not had a coffee, I would say.
Whenever we go, we very rarely go for dinner. I can't even remember the last time we did, to be honest with you. But whenever Katie and I have been out before kids, let's just say that, she will have a plate with like three quite expensive little chocolates on it. And I just look at her and think, what, you're wasting your time.
Now, you're skirting the issue here. What dessert did you have on your board game date?
Thank you for using the word date there. I would say if you're in an Italian restaurant, you have to go tiramisu.
Of course you do.
Got to go tiramisu.
Yes, and you did?
I did, and I feel like if you eat enough of them, you could get drunk.
This is Bush and Rich's Daily Takeaway.
Nerd's heaven today. Nerd's heaven. Because, as you all know, I'm off to a strategy board gaming convention on Friday for the weekend. So cool.
So that's such a cool reason guy. You're taking Friday's show off and that is where you're going.
Yeah, if you listen to Friday's Home Time show, I won't be there because I'm travelling to Coventry for a board game convention. Honestly, it's my favourite time of the year. Two nights in Coventry with loads of other nerds playing board games. I absolutely
love it. Wonderful. You'll be happy.
Be happy. They've got a bar there, loads of good food, and you can leave your games set up and you play till like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's great people. I absolutely love it. But here's the thing, right? One of my favourite board game designers is over from America for the convention, okay? And his name's Mark Herman. He's designed... If you know board games, you'll know these games. They probably won't mean anything to you if you're just a casual, not a board game fan. But he's the American Civil War game, For the People, a game called Pericles about the Peloponnesian War, Pacific War. Our producer's rolling his eyes.
So am I.
He's like the Ronaldo of board gaming.
That's great.
All right? So, but anyway, I went for lunch with him today. And what I did when I was there, and this is quite nerdy, I got him to sign one of the rule books.
That's amazing.
Of one of my favourite games, Pericles, about the war between Sparta.
I have to say, the size of that rule book, that's like, I mean, when I've played Monopoly and all that kind of thing, that's just like a pound. That's massive.
It's incredible. So, yeah, it's amazing. So, I've got this with me now. This will be whenever I open and play Pericles, I'll be like, oh, Mark signed that, which is pretty good. So, I thought this could be an interesting point of discussion for Home Time tonight, where I want to know, right, what's the most unusual thing you've had signed? You've ever had an unusual thing signed by someone famous?
A tin of Sild. Can of Sild. Lovely, juicy Sild.
What is Sild?
Fish.
Is it?
Yeah. And I'm a massive Harry Hill fan. And back in the day, Harry Hill had a bit of a routine where it was all about Sild. And I discovered, this is like decades ago now, that he was switching on the Christmas lights in Poole High Street in Dorset.
Brilliant.
So I went down with a Sharpie and a tin of Sild. And asked,
got
Harry,
tasered.
Asked Harry Hill to sign my Sild, which he did. And said I was the first person to ever have asked him to sign a tin of Sild.
So that tin of Sild is in your house? Have you kept it?
Somewhere in a loft.
That'll be worth quite a bit.
I don't think so.
That's still quite cool though, isn't it?
It's really cool. It was for me, yeah.
Well, that is unusual. Nathan has just tweeted us now saying Dennis Taylor signed his packet of Hamlet in a casino on the Isle of Man in 98. So they're the outliers that you've got to beat. This person doesn't leave their name, says Huey Morgan signed my boob at Tea in the Park back in 99. And Marty says, I went to get Peter Reed's autobiography signed at Waterstones, and my youngest son insisted he signed his copy of Zog by Julia Donaldson, signing a photo as well. Keep them coming in, it's 8, 12, 15.
Which is a great book.
It's a brilliant book.
I don't want to be pushed on what's a better book, Zog or Peter Reed's autobiography, but they're both good books.
I don't think Zog's book mentions the Charity Shield.
Now, last night, big news at at the Radio Academy's yearly awards at Tim Burgess's listening party, won gold. No doubt he will be celebrating this Sunday when he's also joined by Keane, who will be talking through their Hope and Fears album, one of the best-selling albums in UK history, 9 times platinum in the UK, selling over 10 million copies. You can listen to the show Sunday night from 10 and catch up on past episodes of the show, including the U2 and the Bangles, in the free Absolute Radio app.
This is Bush and Rich's Daily Takeaway.
I got Harry Maguire to sign a Man United contract. Beat that. Don't hijack our phone in for you an axe to grind with your football team. Gerard in Moulton says, "What? This would be an amazing title for a book. Randy Jackson signed my katana." What about that?
That's what, amazing.
Don't even know what it is.
Is that? I thought that was a board game.
Katana?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, Catan. That's a board game.
I think Katana's something entirely different.
I've got that very mixed up. My son and wife queued for 4 hours to get Jenson Button to sign his book, which he'd never read.
Oh.
Well, Jenson's written it.
He's unless his son's, not read
oh,
it.
Oh, his son's not read the book.
Otherwise, I mean, maybe it was ghostwritten for Jenson. Who knows?
But then Jason goes on to say, now my son works with Jenson.
So hopefully that's resolved in some way.
You'd hope so, yes.
Oh, well, this is putting the cat amongst the pigeons, this phone, isn't it?
Right. David, strangest thing you got signed?
I had my prosthetic leg signed.
Right. By whom?
By Dave Gorman, the very wonderful comic, after a gig. He wasn't fazed at all, which amazed me. I thought I was going to flummox him or something, but nothing. He was just like, yeah, I do this all the time.
Wow. And he's an alumni of Absolute Radio as well. Yeah. Dave Gorman did a show on Absolute Radio for us for a bit as well. And did you go there thinking that I'm going to get my leg signed by him, or was it a spur of the moment thing? He didn't have anything to write a signature on.
Complete spur of the moment. I was trying to catch him out, I think, if I'm honest.
Where on your leg did he sign? Did he sign down by the ankle, or which bit of your prosthetic leg?
Well, he signed the foot, which was brilliant. But nobody's ever seen it because, you know, unless you're in, you know, on holiday somewhere, nobody's going to see the foot and this Dave Gorman signature on it.
Dave, just another question. I really don't want to be rude here. Did he come to your leg, or were you able to like put the leg up to him? What's the for?
I took the leg off.
That's what I'm wondering.
Until I was next in the queue, and then just sort of plunked it in front of him.
Right, I'd love to have seen his face.
Incredible.
What a picture. Lovely to speak to you, Dave. Take care.
Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Steve has emailed us. This is Bush and Richie. My claim to fame. I was on a train from Newcastle in 1981 on my way to join the army when Alvin Stardust got on at Doncaster and sat next to me. He asked if I wanted his autograph. I didn't, but got it anyway in my diary, and I still have it today, and they're selling on eBay for £6. Cheers.
The Daily Takeaway.
Bush and Richie's Daily Takeaway.
Got Hazel on the line right now, throwing a hat in the ring. Hazel, what did you have signed?
A Harry Potter book by Seve Ballesteros.
This could be the best one yet. So you got... is he a golfer?
Seve Ballesteros is one of the greatest European golfers of all time, but I did not know he was into Harry Potter.
So he signed a Harry Potter book for you. Tell us what happened.
Well, we were out in Lytham for the day. My son and husband were playing sort of badminton, knocking about on the grass. I was sat with my daughter and walked past. And I thought, he looks familiar. My husband watches golf all the time. And I thought, is he a film star or something? Very handsome man. And my husband were trying to, he was shouting, isn't he? Here's a little look, she's Seve Ballesteros. Like that. So we got in the car, followed him, and got him to sign Jordan's Harry Potter book.
It's all you had there? That's all you had there? And it's still there? You've still got it?
Oh, we've still got it, yeah, definitely. It's one thing I haven't given him when he's left home. He's 33 now.
Wow.
But, yeah, I've kept that.
What did Seve write? What did he write in the book, incidentally?
He put best wishes, Seve Ballesteros.
Inspired.
he didn't say Jordan. He put Gordon.
Oh dear.
So we've still got it, but it was lovely.
The Daily Takeaway.
Bush and Richie's Daily Takeaway.
We had tears at bedtime at home last night. Obviously, as you know, we were doing the show from home last night because of train strikes.
It was great to be around during the bedtime routine that we normally just conveniently miss on the train home.
Oh, tell me about it. What a blessing that was.
Oh, great.
But tears at bedtime last night because my birthday today, and Rocco was being reminded that when he woke up today, it was Daddy's birthday. Now, you would have thought, that's a happy occasion.
It's a nice thing, isn't it?
But no, there were bedtime tears last night because he's got himself into his little head, his little six-year-old head, that I'm getting old and I'm soon going to die because I've got lots of hair.
Oh, I didn't expect hair to be involved. He's kind of nearly there. And it's inevitable for all of us. I don't want to put a damper on your birthday.
No, his sign was the hair thing. He was like, Daddy's really hairy, isn't it? And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm a relatively hairy man.
Yeah.
But he's got in his little head that when you start getting very, very hairy, that's it. It's soon done. You're done.
Well, God bless him when he hits puberty. He's going to have a nightmare, isn't he?
Yeah,
sit down and have a chat with him.
Quite the shock. But isn't it? I love the fact that when you are a kid, you get things in your head that are so wrong, but you work yourselves up and kind of think, oh, that's right. I remember thinking that if you didn't drive a car, that would mean that the longer you didn't drive it, you would be stranded and marooned somewhere because, like, all the fuel would drain out of it. So as a kid, I was always itching to get out of the house saying, shouldn't we be driving there or something or other?
That's so weird because, like, I've never heard of that before, right? But I, during lockdown, hardly drove our car. Went to go and drive it and the battery went flat.
Well, there you go. Maybe I was actually preempting everything.
You're a visionary. Nostrophurthus over there.
Are you getting anything wrong?
Well, when I was a kid, I was absolutely petrified of machine car washers. You know the ones where you, like, I haven't been in one for years, so I don't know how
with
my reaction...
With the rollers, and then you drive through.
Yeah, you drive through, you turn the keys off, honestly, absolutely kick off if my mum and dad ever took us through one with the car. You remember you turn the keys off in the car, and then these kind of this monster, like a wet Fraggle.
A machine.
It would then slap, all the slap, slap, slap on the windscreen, and foam would come out, and they'd make loads of really weird noises. Petrified.
I put it to you that you still are.
I don't know how I'd react. I've not been in one since.
I would happily drive to Leon C one morning and take you through a car wash.
But I would like to say to you, I don't know how I'm going to react. Do you know what I mean? I don't know what could happen in that
car. I'll pay to see you.
This is Bush and Rich's Daily Takeaway.
Young minds are fantastic minds, but they don't always get things right. What did you get very wrong when you were a child? A great text this. When we voted out of Brexit, my six-year-old sister thought it meant we had to move home and leave the country. She cried for days, thinking that we wouldn't be able to go back home.
God bless her. Ray in Colchester says, as a very young kid, I thought that if you had a sister, you had to marry her. Well, what happens in Colchester stays in Colchester. I've been up there.
Darren, what did you get wrong as a child?
See, I'm confused. There was always snow on top of the mountain when it's the closest point to the sun. But near the bottom, there was no snow, and it should have been snow down there because you're furthest away from the sun. I never used to get that, but obviously I do now.
Wow, that's weird. It's a good point, that. And I don't have a scientific answer for it, but you think of the mountain Snowdonia. Maybe it's like a play on snow down there.
Snow down there.
My friend.
I like that idea, yeah.
Thanks, Darren.
I know you might have got it wrong as a kid, but actually it's not one that is that easy to explain away, is it?
No, there shouldn't be snow up there because it's right next to the sun.
Exactly, yeah, which will melt it.
Yeah, that was my thinking, but
obviously
I'm wrong.
Well, he says he's obviously a bit like... I feel it's unresolved for Darren. Do you feel it's been you've had it successfully explained to you, Darren, to this point?
No, I gave up believing it.
Says old car wash boy over there.
I know. We need to sort it out. We need therapy together.
Richie's Daily Takeaway.
Do you know what? I've just learned that one of my music heroes has sadly died. Steve Albini, frontman of my favourite band of all time, Shellac and Big Black as well, has just sadly died. I've just found out about it now on our little lads WhatsApp group. And I just cannot believe it. A load of my friends have got tickets to go and see him. Shellac are about to release a new album in a couple of weeks' time. They're like a kind of three-piece punk band. I loved them since I can remember, since the days of university. We're going to go and see them at the Fleece and Firkin in Bristol. And I just can't believe it. So Steve Albini's produced as well some of the most famous albums of all time. Sea Monsters by The Wedding Present, In Utero by Nirvana, really distinctive way of recording drum sounds and that kind of thing. 61 years old.
Oh, wow.
Can't believe but God bless him. So we are missing a legend this evening, RIP Steve Albini.
The Daily Takeaway.
Bush and Richie's Daily Takeaway.
My 6-year-old is very worried that I'm going to die soon because I'm very, very hairy. And hairy people are old.
Oh, dear.
Not the case. I've only turned 47, thanks very much. David, what did you get wrong as a kid?
Being taken to He-Man Land. So when my brother and I were younger, we shared a bunk bed, and we were also heavily into Knight Rider. So, it's a winning combination, isn't it? So he had all these bits of paper he cut out and drawn on, stuck up to show that he had the console from Kit. So obviously his bed was like the car, could do wonderful things. Right. And he promised to take me to He-Man Land.
Do you mean Eternia, the planet of Eternia, which I believe is He-Man Land, essentially?
I was about to say, I mean, we called it He-Man Land as a kid, but I'm fully aware it's Eternia.
That's fine.
I mean, I may or may not still own all seven series on DVD. Yeah, it's something that stuck with me. But yeah, so he promised to take me to Eternia, go and see all the good folks there. And I popped to the loo first, because, you know, you're on a long journey, you've got to do that. And when I came back, it was only for him to tell me that he'd already been there and that he couldn't possibly take me again.
Oh, my word. That's terrible.
And, so I immediately burst into tears, went running down to Mum, and she obviously wanted to comfort me and say, don't worry, he can't take you to He-Man Land in his bed. It's not possible.
He's not got that bit of paper for the console.
well, you know what parents are like. He said, well, I'm sure it's not a problem. So I turned my teary-eyed face to her and go, well, can you take me in the car then?
Oh, bless you. Your brother missed an opportunity, though. He could have said, well, I'll take you tomorrow and then get you there and then do that bit that taxi drivers used to do where they look behind the sun visor, charge you 15 quid.
Well, yeah, but this is the brother I was able to swap pound coin to 2p's because 2p's are bigger. So he wasn't the smartest tool in the shed at the time.
Oh, brilliant. He's maybe listening. What's his name? Let's give him a shout out.
His name's Andrew. If you're listening, Andrew, sorry, but not sorry.
The Daily Takeaway.
Bush and Richie's Daily Takeaway.
Later on, we were talking about the strange things that you guys have had signed. Thank you for everyone who's got in touch with some weird stuff tonight. We've got Grant on the line. Grant, what did you get signed?
Iggy Pop signed a police high-vis waistcoat for me.
Wow.
I was at Tina Park. I was working, and I was on the... I got called to the production area because there was a problem with one of the band. Right. And one of the blokes in the band was at Edinburgh Airport and didn't have a driving licence to get the hire car he needed to get to the festival. So I was on the planning team, so they phoned me up and said, you should come and give us a hand. So I went and I found out that he had a driving licence, and I sent a fax. It was that long ago. I sent a fax to the hire desk at Avis or wherever it was in Edinburgh Airport, and they got a... He got a hire car, so he got to do the gig.
Wow, so if it wasn't for you, if people had gone to see Tea in the Park that year in the 90s, Iggy Pop may not have played because one of his bandmates still be stuck at Edinburgh Airport.
I think that might be over-egging it, but I'll take the credit for that. Yeah.
I'd say it sounds pretty accurate, Grant, and I think for that you deserve probably a lot more than a signed high-vis police tabard.
Oh, well, OK.
What did Iggy say on your tabard, if you don't mind us asking?
Iggy wrote, bash him good, Grant. He obviously had a bad opinion of Scottish police officers or whatever, but that was what was written.
Wow.
To be fair, I didn't see him sign it, so it could have been anybody that wrote it, but that's what I asked for.
You're talking yourself out of a heroic story, yeah, that's for sure.
No, you've got to be realistic about it, haven't you? I mean, I was a police officer for 28 years. People lied to me occasionally, so, yeah.
It's taken a turn. We'll wish you a good night.
This is Bush and Rich's Daily Takeaway.
Well, that's it. That's the end of this particular episode of Bush and Richie's Daily Takeaway. I put it to you that you probably actually did have about 10 tiramisu because there has been a giddy feel to today's show.
Our producer, Nick, is this close to handing his notice in. Is that enough? And I apologise to Nick at the very end of this episode. Sorry, I've been a bit too much.